Delighted to be your host. You know, every week we're here to do something that makes your life a little easier, a little better, and we've made a commitment. There's such a diverse thing to living a great quality life. It's not just, well, do something for your health or you know, organize your closet. There's a whole lot of things. And so we're here to be a comprehensive resource one week after another after another. Because I have a prayer. Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. So that's, of course, a high goal, but step by step, they say, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do you make a better life? One step at a time. And today we have a special guest. Our program, as you know, is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com, the home of the Comfort Clock, endorsed by Jack Canfield and Dr. Eva Selhub, a Harvard Medical graduate, ran their wellness center for 7 years. So when you get a moment, take a look. Comfort Clock, AdvancedLiving.com. Watch how easy something can make your life better, and that's a personal guarantee from me, because it turned my life around, and for 15 years I've been helping others. Now, our guest today, you've heard the saying perhaps once in a while, let's work smarter, not harder, right? Well, how would you like the absolute world expert, in my opinion, on doing that? We have a gentleman, Sam Carpenter, who went through some pretty tough times. He was working in his business, doing something like some of you may have experienced anymore in these times, working somewhere 80 to 100 hours a week. Health was suffering, and family, relationships. I mean, of course, when you're working that much, you don't have time for much of anything. And sadly, for all that effort, the business was not doing well. And then he went through and devised a program that he's going to reveal. And what he did was take an 80-hour work week and over a period of time using special methods. And the guy's an engineer. So if you want some special methods and you want them to be practical, go to an engineer. And that's some of his background. And he turned that from 80-hour weeks into 2 hours and basically went from being in trouble financially to making 10 times more income. Got your interest? Boy, I tell you, it gets my interest because I'm running my own business like so many people, and it's like, okay, working smarter, not harder. So today we have Sam, and he wrote the book Work the System, so we're going to have some fun learning about that. Welcome, Sam.
Hey, Kenneth. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. We need you now more than ever. And now, your book, Work the System, Would you tell us, it says, you know, the details of how you went from 80 to 100 hours work week down to 2, and not just 10 times, I'm guessing here from the notes I'm seeing, you actually multiplied your income by 25. So.
Right, yeah. since we had that last interview back in, I think, February, things have continued to improve. So, yeah, do you want me to give the listeners the nutshell on what happened and how it came about?
Yeah, because that, one, you know, gives them a chance for us to relate to, yeah, you really were having a hard time. And then what helped you make the breakthrough and what did you do?
Okay. Well, let me preface my little narration here by saying it isn't about learning these clever tricks 1 through 10 or avoiding these mistakes 1 through 10. And it's not about getting smarter. It doesn't matter what your education is. It doesn't matter how charming your personality is or how good-looking anybody is. It's about seeing the world in a more precise way. And so we all talk about a spiritual enlightenment and how can that happen and why can't I be like Eckhart Tolle and why can't I get something out of these books that will change everything? Well, it's right in front of us, and it's what happened to me. I'm just a blue-collar guy. By the age of 50, I had had a small business here in Bend, Oregon for 15 years. And, I had never been in business myself. I had always worked for other people. Excuse me, I have a cold, so if I get a little froggy here, that's why.
Okay.
So what happened was it's a telephone answering service. It's called Centratel, and we take care of emergency calls, kind of a private 911, for doctors and nursing homes and our funeral homes and HVAC companies. And it's a 24/7 operation and we have staff 24/7. I have 30 employees now. I had about 14 back then. But it's 24/7 operation filled with all kinds of problems because you have to take an emergency message and deliver it.
Wow.
And your staff has their personal problems that they bring to work and it's hard to get people to work midnight shifts and so forth. But anyway, 15 years, I did everything. I did everything from the hiring to the training to the computers to answering the phones myself and 80 to 100 hours a week. And I was a single parent of two kids, custodial parent of two kids. It was a nightmare for all of us. At one point, we were living in the office. The kids were in bunk beds, young teenagers, and I slept on a cot next to them when I could sleep. Ultimately, they went off to college, but I got to the point of a nervous, kind of a mental, physical breakdown, and one night, in the middle of the night, literally, and I can remember the exact circumstance, it came to me what I was doing wrong. And it was a sort of a mini-enlightenment, and what I realized was this, and this is the crux of the whole thing, and it applies to relationships and jobs, if you have a job for somebody or you own a business, your health, whatever, and that is the world is not an amorphous mass, confusing mass of sights, sounds, and events in which a person can barely keep control, and where a person's going through and killing relationship fires and fire killing with relationship problems and business problems, unless you want to see it that way. The truth is, the world isn't that way at all. What the world is and what I saw that night, I looked down on my business, 3 o'clock in the morning in bed, I kind of metaphorically, almost metaphysically looked down on my business and saw that my life, and specifically my business, was a collection of independent systems. Now, what does that mean? It means that I'm standing here at my window here in Oregon, Bend, Oregon, looking out at the big pine trees in my yard. Each one of those trees is a separate system. The porch, each board in the porch is a separate system. There's a road down the way, and our car just went by. That's a system. And the human being powering that car is a system. And I looked at my business, and I realized there was a system for hiring people. There was a system for delivering a message. There was a system for handling a complaint. And I go at a little bit of detail in the book about one of the systems, which is getting the money to the bank. We take checks in the mail. They have to be processed within the business, and the amounts allocated to the correct account. And I think we had 300 accounts at that time. And then the money has to make it to the bank. And we literally lost a deposit on the way to the bank. And a $3,000 deposit, and it showed up weeks later under the car seat of one of my managers. She had lost it on the way to the bank.
No.
Her main goal was to pick up her kid because she was late picking up her kid at daycare, and that was forgotten. And we were, you know, the veterinarian in California, his $75 payment was going to the funeral home in Missouri. And we were allocating wrong. It was just a mess, and I go at great lengths to describe that that was the first system we fixed. But here's the thing. If you can see your world as it truly is, as a collection of systems, and yes, we all know they work together, and I think the last time we talked, I used the analogy of the butterfly over Brazil changes the weather pattern in New Hampshire just a little bit. But we get so caught up in this holistic global thing. I'm going to come back to holism. I'm not bad-mouthing holism, but when you figure everything is connected and you can't do this because it might affect something over there, you can't get anything done. It's a paralyzing thing. So what I did was I fixed that system, and actually I documented it into 53 steps that would be followed exactly, and we never had another problem. And all we've done is tweak the system. The name of the book is Work the System, The Simple Mechanics of Making More and Working Less. And that's what we do. We have about 300 systems. That's the first one we fix, and we do nothing but work on perfecting that system. It's 23 steps now. We've never had another problem, and I don't do it anymore. I was spending a couple hours a week helping my two managers at the time do the deposits. Well, as soon as we came up with that document and everybody agreed how we were going to do it, I'm down to 98 hours a week, and you can see where that went. I went from 100 hours a week to two. So what we do is we see the business. And we can go into it a little more, but also in my health and my relationships, my personal life, that the world is a collection of systems, and it is possible to work on one at a time and perfect them one at a time. And that's what we did in the business. And so I work 2 hours a week only because I want to. I'll pay all the bills. We run a couple of $100,000 a month through the business. I'm the one that should pay the bills. We run about almost a 50% margin, but that's a little over $100,000 in bills we pay every month. And I want to do that. I don't want some bookkeeper to do it. And the other thing I do to take up that 2 hours a week is I have a staff meeting because I love my staff, and I think it's important that as the leader I'm there. But Linda and I go to Europe and Southern California, and we've got a second place up in Seattle now. We have staff meetings with the computer, you know, video conferencing. So I did that with my health. I did it with my relationships. And it was a matter of not seeing the world as a confusing place, but as a place that's very logical and is a collection of systems. And those systems can be perfected one at a time. And so it's very mechanical, Kenneth, very mechanical. But it ends up being very spiritual. And it ends up that my life is very holistic. Things, the gears in my life click along just beautifully. This afternoon, my son is staying with us for a little while here, and Linda and the three of us sat and watched old reruns of Galactica. So, you know, and the snow's coming down a little bit, and I'm having this session with you, and it's just a wonderful day. And every day clicks along in that way. And going back to work, when there is a problem, that means there's a system glitch somewhere. It isn't a person's attitude problem, typically, in my business. It is a system that needs to be tweaked. And so although we're very dogmatic about following these documented procedures, we will change a procedure in the snap of a finger when anybody comes up and points out a better way to do something. So it sounds rigid and regimented, but it is not. It's like the toy, the Transformer, that turns from a car into a big fighting machine. Yeah. You know, it's all metal, it's all steel, but it's able to change itself in a moment's notice. And that's what gives our company strength.
Wow. Now, one of the things that's interesting, Sam, and you were making mention of kind of, as some people would call a dichotomy. Well, you've got everything is integrated and it all works together, and then there's a system for everything, and how can those work? And one of the things that was coming to my mind is the idea that in your car, the motor, if each little part of that thing doesn't work properly and isn't assembled properly in relationship to those things around it, the whole system, the car, that doesn't go anywhere. And so you're saying that you basically took each little part, like of your business, like each part of the car. Okay, here's the motor. What do we need to make the motor work? What do we need to make the transmission work, the electrical wiring? And that metaphor, is that kind of like what you did?
That's exactly what we do when we work the system because, you know, the car needs maintenance. Everybody knows that, even the people that don't maintain their cars until they break down. Everybody knows the way to keep a car going or to keep a house in order or to keep a human body in order is to constantly work on it, to work on the subsystems. And so when the name of the book is Work the System, we work on our systems and the results take care of themselves. You know, we don't worry about the results that much. The systems are perfected. Most people don't do that. Very few small businesses have documents drawn up on the various things that they do, and everybody's doing it the best way they think they can do it. And things are falling through the cracks, and I know your listeners are grooving on this. You know, there's jobs, there's businesses people work for, and there's businesses that people run, and the people within the business know they're killing fires all day long. They're fixing mistakes, and God knows why they're still in business. And 9 out of 10 small businesses are that way. And 80% of all small businesses fail every 5 years. So
wow.
You can get your small business to last 15 years, you're in the 1% territory. And the reason is people are chasing fires, chasing tails, killing fires, and they're not doing what they do best. In my case, it's research and development and working with customers. I don't do the customer part anymore, but the research and development and the new ideas, I have plenty of time to come up with new ideas and experiment around the edges. I'm not constantly on the phone with an angry customer or an employee who wants to quit. We just don't have those problems. Everything's in black and white. The other thing is, it's about efficiency, and my people are paid about double what they'd make at any other answering service with the full benefits and everything. My managers make about double, and so everybody's very happy, and nobody works more than 40 hours a week because there's tremendous efficiency. Because each part of the system, of the, as you use the metaphor for the car, or the analogy of the car, is that all the pieces are functioning perfectly because that's what we do. We work on the pieces.
Yeah. Wow. And how long did it take for you to go from this place of 80 hours a week down to 2 hours a week?
Well, before I answer that, let me mention this quick, and you don't even know this, Kenneth, I don't think, but if your listeners would like to go to my website, workthesystem.com, they can download the PDF of the book, unabridged, for free. They can download the audio of the book for free. I'm giving them away. So that's a whole other reasoning, logic we could go into later. But how long did it take? It took about 6 months to cut that time in half. And then to get to 2 hours, it took another few years. Now, let me tell you why. I was embroiled in a lawsuit with a minor partner for 2 out of 3 years that completely halted our progress. We almost lost the business. Despite our increased efficiencies, I was embroiled in that. Now, the question remains, how long would it take me today if I was to inherit that company to get where I am today? 18 months.
Okay.
But what the heck, you know, a guy like me, I was working 80 to 100 hours anyway, so I'm going to take some of that time and put it over to this other thing, which is documenting and training my staff to follow procedures. And so even though I was doing all the work I was doing, I gave you that illustration of not having to do the deposits anymore, and I cut 2 hours out of my week. I did that over and over and over, and pretty soon I wasn't spending that much time on the business, I was spending it on the documentation. And then ultimately, I realized, why am I drawing up this documentation? I have a staff that can be trained to do it. I'm going to create, you'll love this, a procedure for procedures. a procedure of how to put procedures together. And as soon as that was implemented, you know, now I'm getting down to 2 hours a week. And once we got past the lawsuit, I got my stock back in my company, and we won. Everything was fine. You know, it depends on the business how long it takes, but it doesn't take long. And if you look at the Amazon reviews on the book, a lot of those people in there, I was looking at them this morning, there's about 45 reviews in there. A lot of people started seeing results immediately. within a few weeks. And I even say that in the book. You won't see results immediately, but certainly within a few weeks, depending on what your business is. So then you start building up more time. You start spending that time on even more procedures. And what, here's the thing. Once the epiphany hits, once you see the world of systems, once you're driving down the road and you see nothing but separate systems out there, what to do comes naturally. And the book is full of how-tos and what-tos, but it's mainly, the one-third of the book, the first third of the book is devoted to getting the reader to get to this almost magical place of seeing their house, their relationships, their health, their business as a collection of systems rather than this big swirling mass that's barely under control. And once that happens, everything falls into place.
Okay. This is great. So you've basically given us away. Folks, I want to remind you again, go to workthesystem.com where you can download a free PDF copy of Sam's book, Work the System, or get an audio version of that. So
if they would put advanced living in the subject line, that would help me know where it came from.
Okay. So
please
do that. Put advanced living in the subject line when you click on his website and get that ordered. And then what I'm so curious about, in the book it mentions that you say everything is 99% perfect.
99.9, right.
99.9, so, that's right. It's even more.
It really is 100%, but now we're getting too metaphysical. So the deal with that is I look at the trees out here. These are big ponderosa pines in my backyard. Each one of them is perfect, you know. We want to put a judgment on it that maybe the branches aren't in the right place. We can do that. But each one is perfect. The trees are working fine, you know. The house here I'm in is working fine. I can walk over here into my kitchen and turn the water on, and I'm going to do that right now. I guarantee you before I turn it on, it will come out. Let me try it. Yep.
Uh-huh.
And I can walk over to the light switch. You can go out to your car, folks, and I almost guarantee you your car is going to start and you're going to get where you want to go. Your body, billions of cells, trillions of electrical signals going on all at once. And what an incredible thing the brain is alone without the rest of the body. It's all working fine. So this isn't Pollyanna. This is the facts. The cities we live in, the country we live in, 99.9% of everything works perfectly. But what the media does and what we do in our heads, because out-of-whack systems, dysfunctional systems are interesting, is we think the world is all screwed up. Guess what? That's a snow job. And I'm out of my porch walking through a little bit of hail here. But the snow job is that when you see the world for what it is, a collection of systems, and that 99.9% of those systems work just fine, you can start putting the pieces together in your own life to tweak the few things that aren't perfect. It might be in a relationship. And, you know, I don't know how many people I've talked to, the relationship boils down as the guy won't put the toilet seat down. You know, and it almost ruins the whole relationship. And the guy needs to put the toilet seat down. And it's usually a little thing in a relationship. And not always, of course. And, of course, people get cancer and there's wars going on and all that. But really, 99.9% of everything works just fine. And this is what I talk about in the first third of the book. And it's a different way of looking at things. And it's not anything to do with blind faith. This is about looking around with a new view and understanding that things work real well just as they are. Oh, we don't have all this global peace, you know, and there are problems in the world. I have my nonprofit in Pakistan, so don't tell me I don't know there's problems in the world. But, you know, even in those lives, and I live with the families in the third world countries that I go to, they have day-to-day lives, and there's love within the family, and things are mostly okay. So I put that caveat on there that, yes, I understand there's problems in the world, but in the average daily life, there's very few. And they're easily fixed if you can isolate them.
Ah, there's one of the key words. Sometimes when we're in overwhelm, in the midst of the forest, it's like going, okay, which tree is it that needs an adjustment, so to speak?
The tree that's most likely going to fall over or needs the most help, you know, if you want to use the trees. But you go after the most most problematic thing first. So in my office, we couldn't even get the money to the bank. God help us make payroll if we can't get the money to the bank even. So that's the system we fixed first. So whether it's health or relationships or business, you fix the biggest problem first and then you fix the next one. That's just common sense.
Well, not only that, but if you ask someone if they've got a pain, they will respond to what's their biggest pain. So that's right in alignment with what you're saying. Look, where it hurts the most, put your attention there.
That's right. And that may not be the problem, but that's where you start looking. And as far as my health goes, you know, I was a basket case. I was sleeping 3 hours a night. I could hardly get across the room. I had no friends. And my doctor had me on antidepressants. I went through 6 or 7 different antidepressants to see why I was depressed. He insisted I was depressed. Well, when I got this flu in the middle of the night, I went down a couple weeks later because I stopped thinking about the business for a minute and started thinking about my health. I thought, oh, well, I'm going to take my body apart. How do you take your body apart and look at each piece to see if you're okay? Very simple. You get blood tests. And so I told my doctor, I want every blood test known to man. What? I'm not going to do that. You're depressed. Here, try this new. No, why don't you try some uppers here? <What is this? laughs> You know, Ritalin? Here, try some Ritalin. No. Every blood test. And he says, you don't need it. I'm not going to do it. I'll just go find another doctor. And he said, all right. Okay, and they came back and he said, my gosh, I'm so glad we did the blood test. Your cortisol is on the moon. That's the stress drug. Okay,
yeah.
And there was even a pattern to how it hit. It hit me early in the morning, which is very different from most people. My DEA was non-existent. My adrenal glands were not producing this master hormone. And there was 2 other hormones that I could take care of with supplements. And so he got me on the supplements. One of them, 2 of them were over the counter and 1 was prescribed. And it took a while. I did serious blood testing for 2 years, but I'll tell you, I got 50% better in the first 3 months and then tweaked it. And I still get blood tests twice a year, to make sure everything's in order. And, so what I did was I took my body apart, literally, and there were 4 areas that were really out of whack. I fixed those separate subsystems, and everything else came into place. And it led to a lifestyle that included yoga and meditation. Less work, obviously, was what I needed. And I learned how to sleep again. One of the things I did was I went to a sleep disorder clinic and learned how to sleep. And it's an amazing science, sleep. And I got off the caffeine. I wasn't drinking that much, but I stopped drinking alcohol. And, started to live a life that appreciated this wonderful gift that God gave me, which is my body. And my mind came along just fine after that. And right about that time, I met Linda, my wife, who moved down here from Seattle 4 years ago and married me. And the relationships are good. I have friends again. I'm going to be 60 on the 28th, actually. And I'm really as fit as a 25-year-old right now, and I don't look 25, but I'm fit and strong, and I sleep all night, and everything's good. I have my problems. I have my ups and downs, you know, depression sometimes a little bit during the day, but I always get over it, and 98% of my time here on life, I'm saying thank you. Thank you for giving me this time here. This world is a beautiful mechanical thing, and whoever or whatever put it together, who knows, that's a great mystery, did an amazing thing, and I'm so glad to have a little bit of a chunk of it.
Yeah, well, and to me, so beautiful that you not only applied this system approach to saying, look, here's our business, we can't get money to buy, that's no good, let's do something, fix that, and then you went on to through the business, but you broad spectrum got into other areas of your life, my physical
working
body.
With this, yeah, and if you can see that your life is made up of those separate systems, that's it, see? Now, here's a system for you, Kenneth, is my book. So I'm giving my book away for free, and a person might say, well, why? Don't you have to make money? Actually, I don't. So, because Neanderthal's doing well, so I'm kind of going down this road of giving it away, and the karma thing's going to happen. And, you know, and I hope some of your listeners might go to the bookstore, Barnes & Noble or whatever, and pick up a copy. I'm sending that money over to Pakistan. So it all works out if you see things as a separate system, the book, the tree, the car, the business, and then take apart the separate subsystems of that primary system.
Yeah. Wow. Now, I'm curious, because you've looked into so many of these systems, I don't know if there would be a kind of a number one or you know, key reason why you feel that people struggle, you know, either in business or losing weight or forging solid relationships.
There's a post on the website, workthesystem.com, this morning about quitting caffeine, how to do it. It's the third part of a three-part series. And that talks about what I call quiet courage. And that's the ability to say, look, it's going to be hard. I'm going to quietly get through the day, my first day without caffeine. And then I'm going to do the second day, and I'm going to do the third day. And miraculously, about 3 weeks later, you're going to say, oh, I don't really think I want any coffee today anyway. And you break the habit. So quiet courage is very important, very, very important. And then the other thing is, once you see the systems in your life, and you look, let's say you work for somebody and the business is a mess, and it's just problem after problem, and the employees are mad at the boss, and the customers are mad at the employees, you know what I'm talking about. These are managers of these businesses who don't see the systems. All they see are the results of unmanaged systems. The systems are there. They're unmanaged, and they keep producing these bad results. The same problems over and over with the same customers, the same personnel problems, because they don't see the systems that are creating those bad results. So when you can see the systems, every time a bad result comes up, you just naturally, once you get this insight, delve down deeper and see the system, the dysfunctional system that created the problem. You take care of the immediate problem. Yeah, you take care of the customer or the employee or whatever. But you go a layer deeper, you take another step, and you fix the system that produced the bad result. So at Centertel, for instance, we process, our last statistics were, I think these are the statistics, for every 10,500 messages we processed, and remember, a lot of these are emergency messages, name, number, what the problem is, got to get a hold of the veterinarian, got to get a hold of the doctor. For every 10,500 messages we processed, we had one reported error from a client. So
wow.
You get to the point where if you're working the systems and not killing fires, there's no fires to kill. And in my office, when something goes wrong, my staff is all over it with a vengeance, to find out where and what system can be enhanced or tweaked a little bit so this doesn't happen again. That's what working the system is.
Now, are your systems for your office, are they like a huge office operation manual that's on a computer so you can go in and easily modify it?
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. We have a drive that's separated into segments, and we have our operational procedures. We have our administrative procedures and so forth. The interesting thing is people aren't going in to see how to do things all the time. Everybody knows what the procedures are, okay? So it's not constantly having a printout in front of you to tell you, oh, it's step four and step five and step six. They all pretty much know what they are, but the key is they know what they are, and they know where to go if they need to tweak a system a little better. They know right where to find it, and everybody within the company knows how to do a specific thing. For instance, let me give you the simplest system in the business, which is how do we answer the phone in the morning or the afternoon? Well, we have a seven-step system of how to answer the phone. We all put our heads together and decided there was the best way to do it. Because if you just say, okay, I've got four employees and you all answer the phone when it rings, please, they're all going to answer it in a different way. There is a perfect way or the most perfect way to answer it, and that's what we try to get our people to do. We get our people to do it. Now, if somebody comes in and says, look, this is a better way to answer it, let's say, good afternoon, this is Jeannie, how can I help you? Instead of, may I help you? You know, and I'm just, this is off the top of my head.
Right.
We'll all put our heads together and decide if that's better, and then we will apply it exactly that way, and 100% of the time the phone rings. And so we're applying the best possible process 100% of the time. And then that's it. Everybody does it the same way. And if you can imagine doing that for every process in your business, and again, it's not regimented at all. It's just everybody agrees this works. And the processes are very flexible and can be changed without a whole lot of bureaucratic, you know, fooling around. Then everything's working as possible, as good as it possibly can. And when I started this process, I had this theory in the middle of the night. I said, well, I'm going to lose the business anyway. Why don't I try this? I was going to miss the payroll, actually, and I didn't know if fixing all the pieces would make the final entity, which was the business itself, profitable and a pleasurable place to be. But I'm here to tell your listeners that if you can fix the pieces of a primary system, the subsystems, the primary system will be awesome. I don't care if it's a car or a body or what it is.
Ah, okay. Now, in your book, does it help? Because as a small businessman, I've made a number of attempts to put together an office manual. And it's together to a certain point, and then it seems like a piece of equipment changes or something, and the next thing I know, it's fallen behind, and then someone new comes in and attempt to get them trained, and then it's like, uh-oh, we're now trying to train them with some a manual that has some accurate stuff, but some inaccurate stuff.
Well, you got to work the system, Kenneth. You know, you have to work the system. It has to be the centerpiece. And there are certain documents that I outline in the book, in the second part of the book. There's three documents you need. It's the same these are the same documents that run the United States of America. Okay, and let me run through this quickly. First, you need a strategic objective. I don't believe in mission statements. They're short and they're stupid and they're general and they don't get you anywhere. Okay, we endeavor to be the best company in our field, and our employees to be the happiest anywhere, and our clients to be totally satisfied. That is the stupidest thing to spend time on, and the board of directors will spend hours and hours doing something like that and coming up with it, and the employees snicker at it, and the clients don't give a damn. So we have a strategic objective, and it's one page long. It outlines who we are, what we plan to do, and how we plan to do it. And I think it's posted on the website. Anyway, download the book. It's in the book.
Sure.
And then that is your Declaration of Independence, okay? That states what you're going to do. In America, it was how you were going to operate, what you believed in, the freedom of the individual, and on and on. And that's where you're going to go. And then the Articles came up, 13 years later, 12 years, 11 years later, I forget. But the second document would be the equivalent to the Constitution, and that's what we call general operating principles. We've got 30 principles. One is do it now. Why? Well, because that's principle number 17. That's how we operate. And then there's a whole list of them, 30 of them, and whenever there's a gray area decision, that's how it's handled. Well, that's your Constitution. That's how decisions are going to be made. And then the final one, equal to the laws of the land. Now, remember, we've gone through the Declaration and the Constitution, and now we're talking about the laws of the land. These are things that can change and do change. hopefully not at a moment's notice, but they were flexible enough to adapt to changing circumstances. And that's the laws of the land, what we call our working procedures. And so these are the 300 procedures, one being how we get the money in the bank, one being how we answer the phone. These are what we work on, working the system. Those first two documents don't change much, not much at all, but 98% of any documentation is done on the working procedures. And so you can put a manual together, but if it doesn't have this kind of an organizational flow from what you stand for and how you're going to get where you want to go through guidelines for making decisions, through the actual processes themselves, the manual will just sit on the shelf, you know, the result of a flurry of emotional excitement about we need to have this on paper, and then the fire killing starts, and then it's put aside. And the difference here with Work the System is it creates a fundamental series of documents that are living. They're day-to-day, and in fact, the whole business is based around these principles and these these targets and these processes.
Wow. Can you share a few more of some of those general operating principles?
Yeah. The office is quiet, serene, and peaceful. And light. I'm paraphrasing out of my book, you know. We endeavor to have an environment that is serene and peaceful and a pleasant place to be, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the other principles is that we will follow the guidelines exactly as they are. That we will know the strategic objective and the operating principles thoroughly. We will know what they are, and we will abide by them. And it's not an oath or anything. It's just a way of processing and a way of proceeding through the day.
Sure. You know? Well, I'm wondering. You've interacted over the years with a number of different businessmen, and it took you a while to come to the place where you put together your general operating principles, and you said you kind of made 30 of them and that you use that as guidelines for making decisions. Do you think that these, that many of the 30 would apply to quite a few businesses, or are they to your business?
Of course, and people can add to them. They're available in the back of the book, and we actually have some software that we give away. There's a $25 a year fee for the server, but we basically have spent thousands and thousands of dollars on the software to help people put these documents together. It's called Easy Template Software. All three of the documents, and it has my principles, because I think most people would agree on most of my principles, and they're there as a template to make it quicker for anybody to put things together. Now, these principles are things that you believe. You know, like, Kenneth, you have certain beliefs that you believe deep in your guts, and in running your life and your business, you want those principles to be applied. And so you put them down on paper, and you share them with the people who work for you. And then you say, okay, I'm going to pay you. I hope you can buy into this. This is the way we're operating, right?
Yeah.
And let me pull my book out here, and I am going to work through a few of these principles verbatim, okay?
Okay. Now, I see here on workthesystem.com where we go in, I believe it's under resources. Where it says, why free, and then we've got a menu. You could buy the hardcover book, which you said the proceeds of that will go to schools in Pakistan, right? And then there's the download the PDF, download the free audio, blog. Now, you mentioned some software for...
Yeah, Easy Template Software. And I think that's up under that tab, Beyond the Book.
Oh,
there's
okay.
A tab there on the toolbar.
Yeah, there it is. Easy. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So, I mean, folks, this to me is so wonderful, because here you are, Sam, not only writing a book and sharing the principles that brought you to success, but you've put software together that you use and that you're sharing with us, so that we can have something to help us go through the steps, because it took you, like you said, over 3 years, but even if you hadn't had the lawsuit, a good year and a half. And now, I bet, if you had this to start over again and had access to your software, how quickly do you think you'd be able to turn your business around?
Well, I think, the business I bought was pretty fouled up when I bought it. It was in the bottom of a recession in 84. With all the resources I have now, I think, and with what I know, I think 18 months is proper.
Okay.
And as far as giving this stuff away for free, do you have any idea how liberating that is? So I'm giving a free boot camp in Bend on November 16th and 17th, and there's information on the website about that. It's a day and a half, charging $100 to cover the meeting room and two meals, and everybody gets a book. I'm going to stand up on that stage and speak my mind. You know, I'm not up there to perform. I'm not up there to – I guess I'm there to please people, but – it's so liberating not to charge $2,000, which is what I was doing before, that, Am I giving them their money's worth? Are they getting, you know, have I prepared myself enough? Well, I will be prepared, and everybody will get their money's worth, in the sense that when they come in, they'll come in one person and they'll leave a different person. They'll approach their life differently when they leave. I've done one of these before. But giving this stuff away for free is just so wonderful, and you can tell I love talking about this stuff.
Well, one of the things I was tongue-in-cheek, because I don't know if people would go for this, but to be able to stand up and say, look, I used to charge $2,000 for this, because a lot of seminar leaders will charge thousands of dollars. I'm giving this away for free, but to help you establish value, if you don't use it and you don't get any better, then you owe me $2,000.
Well, I hadn't thought about that, Kenneth. Maybe that's a funny thing. That's a funny thing. You know, I mean, this is sounding like an info commercial, and I'm sure the listeners are wondering how much money am I going to have to send this guy for every month for the rest of my life? But honest to God, there's nothing further than what we've talked about. There's no catch here. I just enjoy doing this. I enjoy going to Pakistan. I enjoy riding a tandem with my wife, Linda, and climbing and talking about this. And I'm really enjoying the heck out of blogging. And there's a couple of posts every week. Oh, your listeners should go to the website and also sign up for the newsletter and the blog while they're there, too. It's all free.
Yeah. Well, to me, Sam, one of the things that I think is so beautiful and what you're doing is, in a way, it's a bit unique. Typically, when a person is being philanthropic and they've made enough money so that their lifestyle is fine, they're taken care of, their needs are met, then they might donate whatever, something to a hospital or a library. And your philanthropy is basically giving people educational tools to bring their life and their business into order. And to me, that's a powerful, broad-spectrum philanthropic approach.
Well, it is for me. I read those Amazon reviews, and I just, you know, it's just a little good feeling in my belly that I've helped people get out of their own nightmares. And boy, I know this nightmare I had was nothing unique to me. There's a lot of folks out there suffering. Working too hard, not making enough money, want to start their own business, got their own business, but working too many hours. There is a way out of the confusion, and it's mechanical, and it's believable, and anybody can do it. And again, it doesn't matter what anybody's IQ is or how great their personality is. It's a matter of seeing the mechanics and then working the mechanics that are out there, which 99% of the people out there do not see. They don't see their worlds as a collection of independent systems that can be worked on one at a time. Anybody can do that, like a conveyor belt. You fix one, you make it permanent, you go to the next one.
Okay.
By the time you're done, it might take you a year, but you really got something going. You got an incredible efficiency there.
Yeah, and if I'm understanding correctly, this is what you'd call a non-denominational kind of practice. In other words, you're not saying, getting on your knees every day, oh, please, God, show me how to do this,
this is not anything. It's not New Age, it's not religious, it's very secular, but in its secularity, as you understand the beauty of how the world is put together, you get real spiritual. And it comes down to the things that are right in front of you, not something you read out of a book, but something you see right in front of you. You drive to work and you marvel. You marvel at all the cars that went by, and you know they're all pretty much going to get where they need to go. You marvel at the human beings behind the wheels of those cars, the miraculous human being, this collection of silica sticks supporting this meat, you know, and how these bodies of ours can perform what they do and carry us around. And you look at the roads as a system, amazing. Yeah, sometimes a streetlight doesn't work. So what? 99.9% of the time it does. Your police force, your people at work that generally do show up on time. And, you know, the world really is a miraculous place if you can pull yourself away from focusing on the dysfunction that's out there. And there's dysfunction out there. There really is. But your personal life doesn't have to be. And we talk about Stephen Covey's circle of influence, and you work inside that circle, and you improve things in there. And by the way, this doesn't have anything to do with replacing Tony Robbins or Jim Collins or Stephen Covey or any. This enhances all these tremendous philosophers of our age. It's not a matter of throwing anything. It's not a matter of not going to church anymore. It's not a matter of divorcing your spouse. This is to take the life you've got, presuming you're pretty much doing what you want to do, and making it really, really work.
Yeah, well, to me, that's fabulous. Now, there's a kind of a fun name here. Is it Occam's Law?
Occam's Law, right. Occam's Law. So he was a medieval philosopher in England, Sir William of Occam, and he stated, there's a controversy whether he's the one or not. It doesn't matter. But Occam's Law states in colloquial terms that the simplest solution is invariably the correct solution. Okay? So, for instance, and this applies to everything. For instance, Linda and I, last week were in Seattle. We decided we wanted to get a place up there for the winter. We usually spend the winter in Palm Springs. Can you imagine we're going to spend the winter in Seattle? That's a whole other subject of why, but we're excited about it. Should we buy a house or should we rent an apartment? We go back to the solution is very easy when you use Occam's Law. No, you rent an apartment. The economy's too screwed up. We don't know if the bottom's here with buying stuff. We want to preserve our cash. There's 1,000 reasons why we would want to rent a nice apartment that we got over in West Seattle on the fifth floor and looking out on the ocean. It's beautiful. Then get bogged down with a house. It costs us $25,000 just to close the house. I mean, why? So Occam's Law can apply to everything. How you get to work, you know, the simplest way, obviously. The simplest solution to a marital conflict is usually much more simple than anybody ever even thought of. It's like, hey, guy, put the toilet seat down. That's a simple solution. And, let the guy go play cards once a night with his friends, you know. And so the simplest solution is invariably the correct solution. That's it.
Wow.
That's the fundamental of the book, too, by the way.
Okay. So definitely simple is better, or that old KISS principle. And now we can call it Keep It Simple, Sam.
Well, I think that's within the second paragraph of my book that I said that exactly. Keep It Simple, Stupid. Yeah.
Well, there we go. Wow. Now, I got a couple more minutes left, and I wanted to check in and see there was, you know, any things that, in kind of wrapping up, that you felt was important we may not have covered or
let me run through a couple of these principles here with you quick. Let me just read a couple of these. And here it is, number 9, we find the simplest solution. Occam's Law, also called the law of economy, states entities are not to be multiplied beyond necessity. The simplest solution is invariably the correct solution, so we use that with every decision we make. And number 10, the money we save or waste is not monopoly money. We are careful not to devalue the worth of a dollar just because it has to do with the business. See? Mm. And so I got 30 of those. Those are the operating principles, and everybody buys into them because they're sensible, and people contribute to them, too, when I put them together. But as far as wrapping this up, I would just encourage listeners to stop whatever they're doing. Well, listen, finish out your radio show, and then look around if they're in their home on this Saturday afternoon. Look around the house and notice all the things that are working perfectly. And look at the car when it pulls out of the garage. The garage door goes up. If you don't have a garage, get in the car and drive down the road and look at the beauty of the systems that do work. And everything from the tree to the car to your spouse to the place you work to this wonderful country we live in and this beautiful earth. 99.9% of everything works just fine. And when you come from that angle, you look at your own problems, and you have to say your life works 99.9% perfectly. There isn't that much to fix. Yes, I know some people have cancer. I understand that. It's not a perfect place. But for most people, in most situations, and even people that have cancer, those are probably the people who appreciate life more than anybody else for the beauty that it is. So it's a matter of just looking around, getting mechanical, and then appreciating this place we live in and these bodies we inhabit.
Sam, we just had a system glitch here. And
okay. I don't know where I got cut off. Do we have a little time left?
Got about 5 minutes then, thanks to the grace of radio magic.
Okay, I'm guessing we got cut off before I started talking. I was going to rattle off a couple of these operating principles.
Yes.
Let me do that. Number nine, we find the simplest solution. Occam's Law, also called the Law of Economy, states entities are not to be multiplied beyond necessity. And number 10, the money we save or waste is not monopoly money. We are careful not to devalue the worth of a dollar just because it has to do with a business. And then here's number 12, just don't do it. Eliminate the unnecessary, think simplicity, automate, refine to the smallest amount of steps or discard altogether. And you can see those 30 principles, what they are, and we get everybody to attach to that. And two things I can add here at the end, Ken, if I can, is that I encourage everybody to go to the website. Everything's free, the boot camp, download the book, audio and PDF. And then there's the software, and it will help with this. And there's no catch. And if your listeners would just put whatever you want them to put in the subject line, you know. Advanced living. That'll help me know where it came from. And then the other thing is you asked me to give a parting message, and this would be that, is when your folks are done listening to the show, look around in the car, at home, wherever, and see the things around you that are working just fine. For instance, I'm in my house, and the music's on softly in the background, and Linda's working her incredibly complex computer in the other room, and the water will come out of the faucet, and the refrigerator's working fine. You know, the house is working fine, 99.9% of it. Same in the car. And when you're driving down the street, look around and see that the street lights are working, the roads are working, the people are gently in the other cars getting where they want to go. And these bodies are amazing, the complexity and how well they work, carrying us around every day. Once you can see the separate systems and the beauty of those separate systems and see that they work 99.9% of the time perfectly, then a person can go to work and find the dysfunctional systems and fix them one at a time. But you can't do it with a blanket. You can't just start taking antidepressants and think everything's going to be perfect. And in a business, you can't just hire some mind reader, new management person, and think they're going to fix everything. They're not. They're going to start their own business ultimately. You got to fix the pieces one by one, and then you've really got something.
And then, as you said earlier, start with where there's the biggest problem. What's the most dysfunctional?
Right. Always start with the worst problem, of course. Yeah, because once you get rid of, if the worst problem is 20% of all your problems, now you're down significantly working into your problems. You've got 80% left. Or maybe your biggest problem is 60%. But what you got to do to fix a problem, whether it's a big one or a small one, is you have to delve down into 1, 2, 3 linear steps of how that system processes over a given period of time. So I talked about getting the money to the bank. 23 steps, they're in a linear process. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's how simple it is. And you get that done, you get everybody to climb on board, and you move on to the next one. And that's how a business is run.
Now, one of the things I'm hearing, so if this is in your business or relationships, when you put forward some principles for working a system, you make sure that everyone has agreed to do them.
Well, yeah. Yeah, you're paying people. They have to. And I had some management change when I did this. I said, this is how we're looking at the business. Well, I had a couple of people didn't want to do the documentation. They had to go. You know?
Yeah.
I can either cater to my employees and let them do it the way they want to do it or not, and I choose the or not. It's my business. And so I accumulated people from outside over the years. I have some people who have been with me 20 years. They went through the bad times with me ever since. But my two young managers, one's a high school graduate, and you wouldn't believe how much money she makes. And then I've got my chief operations officer is just a bachelor's degree out of college. They're making way more money than they can make. But what they are, they're systems people. They understand that things are made up of components, and you got to work on the components, and you got to document. Well, we don't spend all day documenting. It was pretty tough at first. But, you know, and everybody does it, and everybody loves doing it because the office is serene. It's a great place to work, and everybody makes a lot of money, and everybody works over 40 hours. So very cool. I work too. But, you know, somebody has to be at the office. to work.
Yes.
And so those are called employees.
Wow. Well, Sam, I just want to thank you. This is inspiring to me, and I've got someone new coming in my business Monday. And,
oh, dear.
And so we're going to I'll go immediately after the show, order your software, and then begin to use this on Monday. And this is just what a wonderful, wonderful gift. And I'll stay in touch and have my listeners, I'll keep things posted from time to time on how I'm doing, and certainly invite all my listeners to go to workthesystem.com and take advantage of the free things and invest $25 and get the software. Geez, this is great. Sam, I just want to thank you so much and wish you and Linda all the best.
Thank you, Kenneth. It's fun.
You're welcome. You have a great weekend. Beloved listeners, tune in every week. Sam, thank you so much. To everyone out there, God bless, and goodbye for now. Let's go.